We have seen a failure and or refusal to obey ICASA's orders to reverse the public protest ban, which shows the SABC board and senior management do not believe they're accountable to the public. And we see that their vested interests, including big bonuses, allegedly at least, in regard to the SABC multi-choice deal. So what this evidence shows, and the reason our presentation was called Why These Crises Really Matter, is that all of the other things you've heard have been in and around the SABC. These are the things that impact the content that every South African has to be exposed to. These are the things, this is where the rubber hits the road, as they say, where this crisis impacts South Africans. We've heard about their loss in audiences and their loss in advertising revenue. These crises are very real. And in fact, you see a management team that is not only in crisis, but one that has gone rogue. You know, there's lots of talk about rogue units. You want to find it? It's there. It's sitting at Auckland Park. Well, it was partly anyway. We believe that those responsible must be fired and held accountable. We believe that there should be a full investigation into this deal with the SABC and MultiChoice. And we believe that Parliament needs to act too. Beyond this hearing, clearly we need to change the law. We drafted, and by we I'm suggesting Media Monitoring Africa and the SOS Public Broad Support Broadcast, Public Broadcasting was there. We drafted these things for Parliament in 2008, if only we'd had a little bit more foresight then. If we don't do these things, we're merely going to start a new crisis. So it might be well and fine to recommend that these people are removed and fired, good. But we need to change these things in the law. We also would argue very strongly that the SABC's independence needs to be far more strongly and secured and protected, and in fact we believe that in this regard one of the critical recommendations must be that the SABC become a Chapter 9 institution. So in wrapping up, you'll see I've got a quote. It comes from a rather famous case. It's by our Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng, commonly known as the Nkandla Judgment. And in the introduction, he says, "For this reason, public office bearers ignore constitutional obligations at their peril. This is so because constitutionalism, accountability, and the rule of law constitute the sharp and mighty sword that stands ready to chop the ugly head of impunity off its stiffened neck. It is against this backdrop that the following remarks must be understood. If these values are not observed and their precepts not carried out conscientiously, we have a recipe for a constitutional crisis of great magnitude. In a state predicated on a desire to maintain the rule of law, it is imperative that one and all should be driven by a moral obligation to ensure the continued survival of our democracy." This quote is so incredibly apt for this particular crisis that you're seeking to investigate. And we call on you to chop the ugly head of impunity off its stiffened neck. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Burt, just one or two questions. The first is, you previously did similar work for the SABC for which they paid you. And I'm raising this because I don't want people to come and say you did this on your own because you didn't get the business from them, you went to write a bad report about them. If you can just comment on that. Secondly, did you conduct a similar exercise in respect of other media houses, particularly in the space within which the SABC operates? And if so, can you provide us with a similar report?
Thank you, sir. Yes, previously we've been paid to, as part of an open tender process, we did commissioned work for the SABC on how the SABC's performed during an election period. I'm not aware that they put out a tender or anything for that for the 2016 local government elections. If they had, we would have applied, as anyone else may have. We were supported in this work by two other donors. It was not a case of looking for these things. In fact, when you do this work, you hope that you don't. Our default bias in our media is that we assume the media are fair, and we look for overwhelming evidence to produce or to point us in a direction that suggests otherwise. On the second issue, yes, we monitored, as my colleague Tandy pointed out, we monitored 73 media in these local government elections, so that includes some of the SABC's competitors. We have got an online version of that report on our website, and we'd be happy again to make available specific comparisons for the committee if they should so request.
Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Nkwanko, your 5 minutes starts now.
Chairperson, I am not going to ask any questions due to the political nature of this matter. I want to agree with you in saying that in many instances the coverage has been, especially around elections, has been skewed in favour of the largest parties without overly politicising it, if I want to. I'll give you an example, for instance, in the Eastern Cape, we got 6.6% of the votes in the 2014 national and provincial elections. That is just over 134,000 votes. But if you looked at our coverage, it was non-existent. It was nowhere to be found, nowhere to be seen. And we still battle with that problem. So I'm agreeing with you to say it's a matter that we need to address. The other one, for instance, look at political parties such as the IFP, sister opposition parties, and NFP, which were the third and fourth largest parties respectively in that province. You could see that in terms of the coverage, they were accorded that status every time the campaigning was covered in the KwaZulu-Natal and so on. So it's a major challenge that we need to actually look into. But I think where coverage is to a large extent very fair would be on SABC radio. I think an area where there's too much contestation for space would be TV. And to a large extent, one can say, I put it to you, that we received, even as opposition parties and the women's voices that we are talking about, were covered actually very fairly on radio than they were on TV. What is your take on that one is the first question.
So the principle of equitable coverage is one that we've engaged on with various media houses and bodies like the IEC and the regulator. And the SABC, in fairness to them, have got an incredibly hard job to do around how on earth you kind of spread the multiplicity of parties that are there. And by and large, as I've said, previous to these elections, they've done, I wouldn't necessarily want to say a brilliant job, but certainly a much better job than many others. If you look at that kind of, if you look at the broad shape of the election graph, you'll see that the ANC doesn't generally get the level of coverage that it has in Parliament, right? But the broad shape of it is that it'll go the ANC, the DA, and then it used to be it was COPE in the 2009 elections, and now it's the EFF, of course. But that kind of broad shape tends to be followed across the majority of media in South Africa. It changes from radio to radio, so you do find that regional thing, so you do find higher covered levels of coverage, depending on where the radio stations are based for some of those different political parties. So you would expect greater coverage of the DA, for example, in the Western Cape, because, of course, given the level of power that they have here, and that is reflected, broadly speaking. So in and of itself, that isn't, we don't believe, a problem, right? It's when it becomes significantly imbalanced, and it's when you look at the nature of that coverage, where it's overtly and clearly biased either in favour or clearly disfavours a political party. The gender issue, I must just tell you, is doesn't hold. Gender is an issue that the ASABC has not taken with any degree of seriousness for a longer time.
Any concrete proposals about how to change that? I'm asking you that question primarily because you said the local government elections will cover the same way that one would cover national elections, even though the dynamics are completely different. How would we address that problem? That's why I've decided to cite the provincial elections as probably a guide, is to look at the strength of a political party regionally before you consider which political party to give airtime. Obviously, the party that rules and the number of votes at national level would be considered. That's why I'm asking you, are there any concrete proposals about how to change it and make it more equitable?
So if you look within the SABC, previous to this again, they had a fairly complex formula around how you determine equitable coverage. It's not an arbitrary thing. And if you look at our data, you'll find that for elections debates, you can see that formula in play, right, where they do give a lot of other parties a lot more airtime than otherwise. So it's not like there's something necessarily new that we need to do here. We need to take the stuff that has been developed over our wonderful democratic history and simply apply it again in a way that is open and transparent. We have said in our reports, I think, somewhere that we talk about the need to debate and discuss what constitutes equitable coverage, because it is a challenge for small parties as to how on earth they can possibly compete with some of the bigger ones. But again, that's not unique to South Africa or indeed to the SABC. That's all.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mokoena. Thank you, Chair. We made an interesting finding in regional broadcast. We found that we as an EFF, where we were slightly better covered, we did better in terms of elections. It's not to say that, you know, if you're better covered, you know, it necessarily results in... But I'm interested in the your inputs to the NCOP on the Broadcast Amendment Bill. What of your inputs were the major ones that you showed, you felt could be impediments to the growth of the SABC?
So two brief responses to that. Our colleagues who will be presenting subsequent to this SOS have got very clear concrete proposals on how we can fix the Broadcast Amendment Act. I don't want to preempt anything that they say, but we are also very happy to share with the committee, because we had the draft amendments, we'll share those. They related to appointment of the board, the nature of the interim board, the transparency, and in fact relating to things around who should have the power to hire and remove executive members.
Thank you, and that'll obviously affect the memorandum of incorporation and any other documents that fall under the SABC.
Yes, again, our colleagues are going to speak to the MOI specifically, which is clearly and patently in the way it's currently done a complete and utter disaster.
Okay. The other thing that I'm interested in is that the bias in reporting, like we said when the SABC was, the SABC 8 was here, it's not a new thing. But what the interesting development in this version of bias reporting is that it's now targeted an individual within an organization. So we're slowly gravitating towards a dictatorship instead of a bias to a political party. What's your comment on that? We've seen, for instance, how Mr. Saudi would instruct that a certain individual must be depicted in a certain way, and that negative reporting against that individual must not be broadcast.
I think clearly it's simply and patently outrageous, and it's completely and fundamentally unacceptable. I don't think if any of us in this room were asked to name the COO or CEO or acting banana bread, whatever other position they choose to invent, we would be able to nominate or name such a person from any other major media house in this country. The fact that that person has taken center stage and has dictated the level of coverage. In fact, we were going to start this presentation with a 7-minute interlude where we had praise singers come in and sing for us, but we didn't have the money and the time. That's all sadly not the power.
Last question. The protest ban, the other unintended effect that it's had is that it has assisted in the failure of the broadcaster to give evidence to who is instigating violence, because it's not in the public domain. We're not able to see who did what. What is your comment to that?
So in our protest ban report, you'll see that at the end we give a more recent case study. It was from October, where there was some violence in Johannesburg. There was a jazz club. There were some of our most incredible local singers were singing that evening, and some protesters burned down an SABC OB van. The SABC was there, their reporters were there, and yet they chose not to show us that, even though... So it gives the public a very clear and overtly distorted version of reality, as if somehow violence occurs by marauding people. And the other challenge with this is it feeds directly into racist stereotypes that these people have no thoughts, they have no context, they have no reason, they have no rationality. They're just beings that go and run and attack things with no kind of rhyme or reason. And of course the research on much of the community-based violence shows that that is simply not the case.
Honourable McCullough.
Chair, thank you. No. I think we should raise the issue that South Africa is a constitutional country. The constitution of the country is the supreme law, and all of us and all institutions are subject to it. So it is very, it's unfortunate that Mr. Bennett chose to say, compare South Africa of today with the racist, autocratic, apartheid South Africa. So I think it's unfortunate. But the second problem I have is that he says he comes here, he's angry. I have a problem with the person who starts a meeting by telling us that he's angry. Because, well, for me, it's a decision that you have made to be angry. I think you keep it to yourself. You must not come and behave like Cloud. But the issue that is crucial, Chair, is I think very important issues have been raised. And I think colleagues here have already corroborated some of them. But the issue that I find interesting here, you know, this is research work. In research, if you leave other variables, you have a story that you want to tell. Now, let me just pull one aspect, your demographics. You've chosen political parties, you've chosen gender. Why did you leave race out? Because it would be interesting to hear as to how the race coverage occurred during the elections, because it's a very important variable. As I'm saying, when you do your analysis, there are these variables that are crucial, and you left the race, and why did you leave the race variable? And what is the outcome of that race variable in the statistics?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Sure, that's a bit of a put down comparing me to Mr. Motsoneng. No. And let me be clear about something. I did not mean to suggest for a moment that South Africa today, even with the SABC as it is today, is anywhere anything like as we were under apartheid. Right? Those are completely fundamentally different things. And if that was the message that came across, I humbly apologize and withdraw that unreservedly. What I intend to put across with that was that these actions are things that seek to take us back to that kind of place where there were no rights, where there was no accountability, there was no transparency, there was no logic to things, there was greed and corruption of a level that we had moved away from significantly. So that's what I meant by that point. On the point of anger, yes, I guess anger is a choice. I'm not sure about emotions, but I think that people should be angry about where we are with the SABC precisely because we're better than that as a nation. You know, we can do and we do the most incredible and amazing things as people in South Africa. So for us to be having to deal with this level of debate about saying, oh, let's have a protest ban as though this is some kind of a clever idea. No, we should be saying, how on earth can we be moving forward in a digital environment? How do we make digital issues address fundamental issues of inequality? How do we make sure all people get a voice in our broadcasting media? Those are the things that I would like us to be discussing. But, okay, around the race. So that's why I'm angry and I maintain that, sir. Around the race issue, race is a critical indicator for us. This is a matter of time, and I don't believe that the coverage around the election specifically impacted the manner in which the SABC represented race specifically. We're very happy to engage with you extensively on this. We're one of the few organizations who seek to continue to expose issues around race representation in media, because we agree it's of fundamental importance.
No. Chair, well, I think one's appreciating this analysis, but there must be an appreciation of the capital that each organization or individuals holds in society. For instance, Nkwanko was saying that in the Eastern Cape, in the radio, they actually got sufficient coverage. And I can't find it in the report in a way. Julius gets super coverage.
Honorable Malema.
Thank you, Chair. Oh.
Honorable Malema.
Mr. Julius Malema. Receives quite substantive coverage. And but indeed, I think the issues that you have raised here are very interesting, and I guess it's something that we will have to look at. But as I conclude, Chair, there must be an appreciation that whilst this is a committee of parliament, this is an ad hoc committee on the SAPC and not the committee to which you were referring to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masango, Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the very incisive input. As a representative of the ACDP, obviously we welcome some of the inputs that you have made, but I'd like to rather discuss the broader issues that we are all without party differences, and that is the matter of the multi-choice deal. We've got a document here in the Competition Appeal Court where you are, as Media Monitoring Project, an appellant. And it's the information there is staggering, I think. And we appreciate that a lot of the commercial information has been deleted. But just very quickly, where is that matter now as far as its hearing? There's obviously been a tribunal hearing, and this is a further hearing that's taken place on appeal. And quite significantly, there's a quote from Professor Maguve, who appeared before us yesterday and seemed very vague about the multi-choice deal, where he says that at the launch of the Encore channel, which was the culmination of the deal, multi-choice, thank you for this wonderful partnership. Actually, for me, I would have preferred it not just to be a partnership, it should be a marriage, etc., etc. We love you so much, multi-choice. Now, maybe it was unfair, I didn't have this document, I would have liked to have put it to him yesterday. But it seems that he has a lot more knowledge of this deal than he would have indicated yesterday as chairman of the board. So obviously that's a great concern, if you can touch on it very briefly. And then secondly, your investigation of other deals, such as the information that we had from Vuyo Mvuko of the relationship between the SABC and TNA and the ANN7 breakfasts with New Age. Are you aware of that? Have you done any investigation? And maybe the SOS Support Public Broadcasting can also comment on this, because we understand that the SABC is in fact, well, according to the evidence, morning live resources are being diverted, I'm told, to pay for the production costs of TNA Breakfast, a total rival. Have you done any investigation into that as well? Thank you.
Thank you. The short answer to that is no. We haven't investigated. We're not an investigative organization. What we do is where the opportunity arises and where we've got something to contribute, we will participate in strategic litigation, as we believe that the current matter is. I do know that some of the matters around the TNA breakfast and the role of the SABC have already been exposed in media independently, and I would hope that some of the bodies responsible would investigate those things. I mean, traditionally, of course, the board is meant to report to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on these things, and I think that they should have been asking them some of these difficult questions, because this isn't the first time we've heard that particular set of allegations. On where the multi-choice case is now, I think it was 10 days ago in court, before the Western Cape High Court, because we submitted a complaint that the SABC had not been forthcoming in particular, the SABC, let me just stress, had not been forthcoming in relation to the documents that had been the order of the Competition Tribunal. And so then it's turned on, and forgive me for paraphrasing here, but it turned on the issue as to the investigative powers of the commission and whether and to what degree they have those or don't have those. And we're currently awaiting judgment on that particular matter.
Thank you. And then lastly, just on the ICASA complaint that about the banning of the protests and the non-compliance, according to your research, of the order that was given by ICASA, are you aware that criminal action has now been laid, and are you aware of any further process in lines of that criminal action? The board chairman seemed to be unaware of that yesterday as well.
Yes, we were aware of it. We heard the regulator announced it, I believe, during their input to this particular ad hoc committee. And so we know about that. I'm not sure if they've laid a charge. I know that they laid a charge on the basis of non-compliance with the board resolution. I don't know if they laid a charge on the issue of compliance with the other elements of their particular order, but we've agreed to work closely with the regulator to see if we can assist in that regard.
Honourable Khosa.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to Media Monitoring Africa. Just one thing that I think we need to pass through. When you were putting together when you were monitoring your media and putting the data together, were you objective? And did you take the factual aspects into account? What do I mean by that? The reality is that in South Africa, the African National Congress is the ruling party, and therefore, your member of the executive will inadvertently be ANC, and inadvertently, those people will tend to enjoy more media coverage, and that's how the nature of news is. I just want to check with you on that aspect, whether you did take those aspects into account, because there's some very useful information in what you are giving us here.
Thank you, Honourable Member. The short answer is, are we objective? No. Are we fair in the manner in which we approach it, and are we clear about the assumptions on which we approach it? Yes, we are. So those things are outlined quite in some detail in the introduction to our full report on that. We work from a human rights-based framework. Our constitution, which I carry with me, is the basis of that document. So our assumption is that media seek to be fair, that they don't go out to be biased in any way, shape or form. So the findings, as I've said, around the you would expect the ANC to dominate media coverage. It has done for almost every single election period.
But then say in your own findings, you are saying the ANC, and this is the key finding that you've put in here, the ANC was assessed double the DA. And it's like now there was something wrong with that outcome.
Okay, so perhaps that's a matter of context for that particular slide. So if you look at the levels of party coverage, that's one thing. If you look at how often people speak within news items, that's quite a different thing. So if you're looking at issues of, and that is referring specifically to biased items. So in those items where clearly favoured or clearly disfavoured, either the ANC, the EFF, DA,
okay,
or etc.
All right, so now I understand, but there's something that I need to comment on. I honestly think that your choice of words are just way too ideologically emotive. The fact that you are also going to an extent of talking about Fairwood's ghost, to me, you become very, very subjective. And you must remember, when Tlaudi Motsoeneng started doing these things, the ANC came out in the open and they challenged Motsoeneng. In fact, some of the witnesses that came here during this interview did say, in fact, Motsoeneng is on record having said, You know, he doesn't care about the ANC. Now, when you are putting these kind of statements across, you are actually suggesting that Motsoeneng has an ideological backing behind him. When in fact, he may have, yes, probably he may have a particular minister supporting him, but not necessarily the party as an institution. And I do think that you overstretch there, and I'm going to stop there. Thank you.
You've got 1 minute if you want to respond.
I think that, thank you for that. I mean, the point is well made and taken. I don't think that we suggest in these reports that Mr. Motsoeneng is driving an ANC agenda. I don't, not at all. What the reference to Verwoerd's ghost is that the kind of approach where you have a person sitting at the top instructing minions at every level below to do and implement things is akin to the way in which the Nationalist Party government sought to run and administer the SABC. There was a lot of work done to ensure that there were various checks and balances created within the SABC to ensure that that kind of thing couldn't happen. So is it an unpleasant stretch to take to suggest that those are the same tactics that the Nationalist Party government did? Maybe it is an unpleasant stretch, but it's certainly an accurate one.
No. Honourable Khoza, please. Honourable Khoza. And Honourable Masango.
No.
Honourable Khoza, we're not going to allow this. No, I'm not.
Good point of order, Chair.
No,
I'm raising the issue of the sound outside, whether it's not affecting the recording. I think it's quite heavy.
Honourable Khoza.
Okay, Chair, I'm sorry, Chair.
Honourable
Oliwe. Thanks, Chair. With your disclaimer of anger, how objective is the contents of this presentation?
As I said, we are very clear about the assumptions that we use in doing the research. The anger isn't about the research. The anger is the situation that we find ourselves in. We've been monitoring the election since we've started, and there's no anger about that. We see it as an essential part of our democratic process. The anger, Honourable Member, is directed at the fact that we are here and we're seeing one of our critical public institutions being undermined, being treated as though it's some kind of thing that can be toyed with for personal gain, and so I don't believe that that anger impacts certainly not the findings in any way, shape, or form. And I'd welcome any kind of comment that would demonstrate that.
In your presentation, you indicated that in 2008 you made a presentation to the NCOP. You indicated that you've also presented to the committee, and it was as if you have lost hope. Do you trust this process of ours?
Sure, that's a difficult one. I think that's what we've seen in recent times, the establishment of this inquiry and the previous meeting of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee gives us hope once again that action can and will be taken. I think that we've seen a very strong and direct response, not only from the from this particular inquiry, but also from other critical bodies like the independent regulator. So it's never too late. You know, I think that we've got an incredible democracy if we just adhere to some of the processes we set out.
You respond like a politician. Do you trust this process, yes or no?
This particular inquiry, I have no reason to doubt it. Our dealings with the people involved here, the level of questions, the interrogation from the honourable members would give me far greater cause for hope and optimism. So yes, we do trust this.
In your slide, which talks to key findings, especially the area of political party coverage, you are saying in bullet three some positive exceptions in elections dedicated programming where greater diversity covered. But you chose when you were presenting to only articulate the negative ones. Can you share with the country even the positive aspects?
Thank you. To reiterate the positive findings of the political party coverage, with the election debates, the dedicated channels, what we did see was an opportunity for various political parties to voice their opinions, to, you know, speak about their manifestos, to have those debates. And that's the kind of coverage that we would have liked to see further. So, yes, we did focus on the other aspects of political party coverage, but it was important to do so. And, you know, I think it's also important that we did highlight the positive, and that did reflect in the election coverage, the election debate programming.
On the slide which talks to protest ban conclusion, your first bullet is saying protests were covered on SABC TV. Your last bullet is saying SABC did not adhere to the order and deceived SABC staff, the regulator, parliament, and the people of South Africa. Can you bridge the gap between those two bullets?
Thank you. That's a lovely question. So if the point of the protest ban was the SABC said, they didn't say we're not ever going to cover protests. They argued that they weren't going to cover violent protests and people guilty of destroying public property. The fact that we know that they were instructed not to cover the right to no peaceful protest supports our argument further. But that conclusion then says, and if you look at the full report on that, you'll find that they did cover protests because it's part and parcel of any news organization's news agenda. But many of them were, in fact, seen to be peaceful protests. So a lot of the protests that were covered in those periods were often labor things, labor disputes. They weren't, however, the ones that were often the ones that were violent. So when we say in our conclusion they covered protests, we're referring to that broader category. But did they show the actual violent footage, which the protest ban said they would not show? No, they didn't clearly, and then that's. That leads us to that particular conclusion.
Honourable Fender.
Thanks, Chair. I think anyone who's watched proceedings over the last week about what has happened at the SABC should be angry. If you're not angry, then I think there'd be something wrong with you. I do not think it is the duty of this committee to regulate the emotions and feelings of people that come to this committee to provide us with information so we can make our decisions. I found that very wrong. I think it's an objective fact, actually, that the SABC gave the ANC unfair coverage. I mean, we monitor our coverage too, and it is quite clear that the SABC gives the ANC way more coverage than it should be getting. In fact, one of the reporters who was here this week, Tandega Kulube, specifically said that they were forced to make sure that they give the ANC more coverage than they deserved. In her written account, she said that the reports would be like a coverage, basically, of government activities. There'd be a report about the Premier opening an envelope there, followed by a minister doing this, followed by a Premier doing that. So it's an objective fact, and let's not pretend that isn't happening. But to my question now.
I'm really not going to allow us for this thing to degenerate. I am not going to allow it. Continue, ma'am.
My question. When the protest ban was announced, the SABC kind of said, you know, it's because, you know, people see what happens on TV, then they go out there and they do the same thing. Is there any scientific research to back that claim?
Thank you, Honourable Member. So, the short answer is no. And the slightly longer answer is that if you look at the many reasons that the SABC put forward, it supports the fact that they didn't have any logical, or maybe not logical, but they didn't have any theorized reason as to why they took that decision. The fact that that a significant policy was changed as a result of a press release, where there was no substantiation given for that, where when they presented during the ICASA CCC hearing, they put forward at least four or five different explanations. So one day it was about the fact that we didn't want young people to see it and then become violent criminals. Another day it was about saying, no, it destroys the public and it gives a bad image to our country. So they kept on putting different answers for that thing, which shows that there was no coherent policy behind it. If there had been, it would be something that you could at least engage with and debate. But the reality is you had a press release, and then any number of ramblings about why they chose to do this.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chauke.
Thank you very much, Chair. My question would be, how long have you been interacting with Parliament in the position that you are holding, from the position of media monitoring? Just your experience, how long it has been?
Personally, I think I appeared first before, one of the ones I can remember was, there was an inquiry into transformation or lack thereof into advertising in the media, and that was in 2000, maybe?
Was that the last time?
I don't know, that was not the last time, sorry. I thought you meant how long have I been doing this. I've been doing it since about 2000, on and off, depending on as and when resources allow us to come and present and when opportunities arise. I can't remember the last time, offhand. I'm happy to look it up and send you the details. Okay.
So you have not lost hope on the parliamentary processes?
No, indeed. My colleagues just pointing out it was the former Publications Board. No. We love our democracy. We love the SABC. We have full hope and belief in the fact that as people we can overcome those that seek to undermine and destroy our democracy. Of that there's no doubt.
Now, on that note, therefore, Chair, I'm going to encourage you to continue engaging with the Portfolio Committee of the Communication, because most of the issues that we have really dealt with here today, especially on the coverage of elections and all of that, they may be best suited at the level of the Portfolio Committee, because this committee may not exist after, you know, after February. So I would definitely want to encourage you there. And I think it's good that where we are seated today, if you look at the Broadcasting Act that we have, I think it's one of the most solid Act of Parliament that we have, because we are media monitoring Africa. So I'll take it that you don't only work in South Africa, you do work in the continent too. And if you had to compare that, you'll find that, in fact, South Africa is having the best legislation in place. Do you agree with me on that part?
Do we have significantly higher levels of media freedom? Broadly speaking, yes. Is the SABC, despite its challenges, a significantly stronger institutionally organization than many of our Southern African counterparts? Again, pretty much undoubtedly, yes. Is the legislation all good? I mean, the Broadcast Amendment Bill, I know because we were involved in a lot of the debates about that. We believe one of the reasons we're here is because we gave far too much power to the minister, which has resulted in 12 CEOs in eight years, because they answer to two centres of power. So I think it's a nuanced answer, but broadly speaking, I think we've got a lot to be proud of in relation to our media and policy environment in South Africa.
So my last question, obviously, is that you're happy to have met the ad hoc committee today and looking forward to engage in the future again on the parliamentary processes, okay?
Yes, and please let me be clear. You know, the anger that we express is not directed at the honourable members. It is, in fact, directed at those responsible for bringing us to this point. But we're very delighted to be sharing these insights with you.
So I'll definitely encourage you to not to lose hope, but to continue putting your point across so that the Parliament one day will listen to your point of view, because there are many point of views that are in place. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, you've got 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, and I apologize that I was a little late. Can I just ask you, if I look at your last recommendations of and the conclusion and the requests, I just want to start with the multi-choice deal. You are suggesting that that we should obtain information from nowhere else, from multi-choice. Can you please tell us what benefit would the SABC derive from the multi-choice deal? Are you aware what are they paying for the channel? You know, it's hardly difficult to believe that it's going free on air. What is the package multi-choice deal include? Do you have any information that could be beneficial to us?
Yes, I believe so there's the original agreement, which I believe you all have a copy of. If you don't, we'll happily furnish you with one. And then there was an amended agreement between multi-choice and the SABC. That was, broadly speaking, or certain components of it were kept under wraps. We don't know what they were. They were revealed to the competition tribunal. But I think that deal has now been made public as well on City Press's website. I'm just looking to my colleague to confirm that. I believe it is there and free for public download, and that details the payments. The things that aren't there, of course, are the allegations around the bonuses paid to other individuals.
So what you're telling us is that we can have access to the multi-choice deal, the contract that was signed, and that we could see who signed it, etc. It's for public consumption, because we were informed by the SABC that is sensitive and commercially sensitive information.
Yes, but I suspect, Honourable Member, the SABC has suggested any manner of things that are perhaps less than entirely true. It is there. It's available for, as I've said, we can furnish you with a copy of the these are matters of public record. They were part of the affidavits that were submitted in the competition tribunal. The original agreement was made public, which is why we decided to kick up a big fuss about this. And the amended agreement, as I've said, I understand, has now been made available on the City Press's website as a result of their expose on Sunday. But you'll see in that agreement that it was signed by Mr. Motsoneng.
Right. I would now like to move to the findings of the 2016 election. Just first of all, you know, what they're saying about media is for a politician to complain about the media is like a captain complaining about the storms on the sea. Sometimes they complain about the content or lack of visuals, but politicians will always complain. It also depends on the news value of some of the issues. Now, I'm just asking you, you are saying our elections is not issue-based, well, the coverage was not issue-based, but it was rather campaign-based. Is there not something wrong with the way that we conduct elections in South Africa, that we personalize matters and actually give voters very little choice to understand what the real issues are?
Yes, we would agree with that analysis entirely. It's one of the points we've been raising for at least a decade about the manner in which all of our media, and by that I mean the community, the commercial, the private, the public, all of them tend to cover them in the same way, which is that very often media houses allow their agenda, their elections agenda, to be determined by whatever the political parties are doing. Honourable Malema is probably one of the most astute people in the world at doing this. You know, he can create an event out of nothing and suddenly get massive media coverage for these things, which isn't to say that isn't necessarily newsworthy, but the point, I guess, is that what our research shows again and again and again is that the issues that people are interested in learning about, how are we going to address poverty, how are you going to address high levels of crime, gender-based violence, child abuse, inequality, these critical, the land issue doesn't feature as a thing. Racism doesn't feature as an issue, and yet these are the things that drive our everyday debates and discussions, yet they don't feature as issues in elections coverage. And we do need to make a shift. And again, this is one of the reasons for anger. Is those are the kind of really interesting questions that Parliament should be engaging with media on, is how do we improve these things? How do political parties shift that? Because interestingly, in our report, you'll also see that we have an analysis that compares political party adverts against the coverage. So you'll see that political parties are far more astute at this than perhaps we may give them credit for sometimes as media, right? Which is that they talk about issues. So the political party adverts we analysed talked about specific issues, whereas the media coverage didn't tend to match that. And again, that's not, I mean, it's an indictment of our public broadcaster, yes, but it's equally so of our other media.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Ms. Smith and Mr. Bird and everybody else, when you get invited to the old assembly or to Parliament, you're entering a political terrain. With a diversity of views and all sorts of things, so you must expect robustness, and I'm not saying you didn't expect it. But equally, even from our side, I think it's all right to disagree, but we shouldn't be disagreeable. We can disagree and argue, it's how we do it that becomes important. So, yeah, we might have been harsh on you, but so have we been on everybody else. And as I said earlier on, it's never personal. It's all in the interest of bettering our oversight ability as Parliament, certainly. So please don't accept that as a personal attack on media monitoring Africa. Once again, if, as we said to everybody else, there's anything that you think of doing between, or think of presenting to us between now and the 28th, that will assist in strengthening our report, that will assist in us being able to deflect any criticism from our final product, please provide that to us via the office, and we'll certainly, in our own engagements as a committee, consider everything, including what has come out today. Having said that, once again, thank you very much for availing yourself, and as is practice from this committee, on behalf of the committee, we wish you a Merry Christmas, and we wish you a prosperous 2017, so thank you very much. Next up is going to be SOS Support Public Broadcaster. If you can give members just 3 or 4 minutes to stretch their legs while Cindy does the necessary. Honourable members, you've got 3 minutes because lunch is not far away, and we will continue with SOS Support Public Broadcaster. Thank you. Thank you.
Nothing of the truth will be my
Yeah. Thank you.
Honourable members, we're on to the next and the final section before lunch. We are going to interact with SOS Support Public Broadcaster, and it's going to be the same method of operation. We will allow the evidence leader to lead and then we will engage. Let me just remind members that at 2 o'clock our program continues with the minister. I'm going to reduce so that you don't accuse me that you don't have sufficient time for lunch. I'm going to reduce your interaction, members, to 3 minutes. Please don't make my life difficult. 3 minutes. It's fine. also to everybody else, as indicated, please put your cell phones off. We notice and welcome guests in the gallery. I have no doubt that you've been briefed on what is happening here by your guide. You're more than welcome to this parliament and to these proceedings. Again, we will do it in the same fashion. We have Ms. Makuse and Mr. Pamodi. I will read your rights, responsibilities and all those things, and it will relate to both of you. And then we will ask you to, Ms. Makuse, the oath, and Mr. Pamodi, the affirmation, separately. That's okay. So, Ms. Makuse and Mr. Pamodi, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages, you are however protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Starting with you, Ms. Makuse, please repeat after me, because I, as I indicated, am informed you're going to take the oath. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I swear by Almighty God.
I swear by Almighty God.
That the evidence I shall give.
That the evidence I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Please raise your right hand and say, so help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Mr. Pamodi?
Yes, sir.
I solemnly and sincerely declare.
I solemnly and sincerely declare.
And affirm.
And affirm.
That the evidence.
That the evidence.
I shall give.
I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
I so affirm.
I so affirm.
Thank you very much, Advocate. You've got 20 minutes.
Ms. Makusa and Mr. Pamudi, you have exactly just under 20 minutes to finish your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I thank you all for inviting us here today. My name is Ludwetsang Makuse, and I'm the incoming national coordinator for the SOS Coalition. I'm not going to spend too much time on a lot of the issues that have been discussed here, but I will spend time on the editorial policies, which is for us an ongoing matter, and some of the public engagements during the period of the SABC crisis. I will then hand over to my colleague, who will take you through details of the multi-choice court case, the broadcasting bill, and the MOI. So SOS is a membership-based broadcasting network. We represent a broad spectrum of civil society stakeholders who are committed to public broadcasting in the public interest. Our membership includes trade union federations, independent unions such as the Broadcasting, Electronic Media and Allied Workers Union, as well as the Media Workers Association of South Africa. Independent film and production sector organizations such as the IPO, SASPED, as well as our civil partners who are Freedom of Expression Institute, Media Monitoring Africa, Right to Know, and Section 27, and many others which I cannot name right now. At the outset, in 2008, SOS Coalition adopted a specific focus on the institution of the South African Broadcasting Corporation. So essentially, our core work and most of our engagements center around the SABC, any challenges that it faces, we monitor it and we seek to resolve those in whatever processes and methods are made available to us. One of the biggest engagements of the year has been the case that the complaint we lodged with ICASA regarding the editorial policies, which then infamously got known as the protest ban. As we all know, ICASA ruled favorably, and the SABC was directed to withdraw those policies. Furthermore to that, the coalition has been in a process of taking that case forward by to ensure really that in future any other board or any other member of the SABC is not able to pass through directives and change policies without following due process, because this is what we believe was another aspect of the editorial policies case that was overlooked. And a key aspect of that was the importance of that really was that it's enshrined in the Broadcasting Act in Section 6. And when the board did not follow due process by inviting the public to comment, especially at the draft phase, so close to finalization of those policies, it was in contravention of Section 6. We also are of the opinion that because the SAB itself has policies that dictate that editorial policies or indeed any other policies should be reviewed within a certain time frame, the SABC board did not follow its own internal mechanisms and thus only changed the policies at a later stage. For us, it's really important that the SABC follows these processes, not because we are trying to be bureaucratic, but simply because it allows for a diverse, wide range of views to be incorporated into the final product. Ultimately, the SABC belongs to the people of South Africa, and indeed this is espoused in the Broadcasting Act. And considering that 7 million of the 12 million TV-owning households in this country rely solely on the SABC for their information needs, it becomes even more important that when we see changes that affect the content that people are going to be viewing, that affect the way in which journalists practice and do their work, that affect the ways in which interviews are held, what obligations media workers have and what they don't have, then surely we want to make sure that due process is followed to make sure that in the end, those who need to be held accountable should there be any issues that arise are held accountable. So while we were engrossed in the initial ICASA case, which was about the protest ban, the violent protest ban, our colleagues at R2K were also preparing and making their own interventions. It was during that time that we were then invited by the so-called SABC8, following their dismissals, to support them both strategically and in other ways that we could as civil society organizations in the actions that then ensued on the 1st of July. That period really for us became known as the SABC crisis, and that was the tipping point. The 1st of July engagements were called Black Friday. If you know anything about history in South Africa, you'll know that Black Friday is about the 1976 bannings of journalists and publications by the erstwhile apartheid government. So it was symbolic for us to use that as a way to show people about where we were coming from, and so as to also remind people not to repeat the mistakes of the past. But most importantly, for us, it was about supporting a worker-led movement that sought to bring to the fore worker challenges that were being faced inside the SABC by media workers, and I think also in other organizations, which obviously we don't really know about right now. On the day of the protest, as my colleague earlier mentioned, a delegation of leaders was invited to speak to Mr. Saudi Musonik. However, that did not happen as immediately as it should have, first of all. And secondly, we also found out that my colleague was deemed persona non grata. So after a long delay of not being able to enter the premises, he was eventually let in. There was a discussion that ensued, and the following Monday, having committed to the delegation that he would engage with them further, Mr. Saudi Mutsuning did not show up. We, of course, have all the events, the recordings of those events and that entire day's proceedings on tape. But to really get to some of the things that happened following that time, after a broader public mandate was sought from other stakeholders as well, who are not necessarily media-related civil organizations, but simply members of the public, as well as other NGOs who are concerned with different other issues, who basically decided that they too wanted to be part of making sure that whatever was happening at the SABC was brought to a halt. And during those times, there was also an instance where some of our pickets were interrupted by protesters who claimed to be supporting Mr. Motsoeneng. And although there was nothing violent that occurred, thankfully, we did come to realize that there was a lot of misinformation going around that we could not really trace where it was coming from. And most of it had to do with the local content policy. And I think I'll use the moment to actually state that the SOS, alongside SASPED and other bodies, has campaigned from 2010 until 2014 for an increase in local content, and actually won a rise to 70% of local content broadcasting in the SABC. So part of that was a regulation that required the SABC to source local content from underrepresented communities. In conclusion, so that I can actually give my colleague a chance to get into the nuttier details of also our legal work and more strategic interventions, I wish to really just state that when the SABC was born, when the SOS Coalition was born, we were called the Save Our SABC Coalition. And for us, the events of this year, getting involved in making sure that the editorial policies were revised and the continuing work that we are doing around that and other cases, was just a tipping point of a crisis that we had identified over a decade ago. It was also a true demonstration to us and really to the South African public that there is an active, real-life constituency all over the country of citizens who are concerned about the SABC and are concerned about how they receive information, how they are being engaged, and how they get to participate in public processes. And I think we should always remember, when we are engaging in these processes, especially for people who try to make allegations that media freedom issues are the domain of intellectuals or the domain of the middle class or anybody else, you know, the events of July 2016, at least to SOS, were an indication that we certainly have a mass-based support of people who are coming from a variety of communities who are very much aware of the linkages between media, public broadcasting, different corporations, different types of media entities, and the ways in which that informs their ability to participate in our democracy. So I really do hope that as this inquiry proceeds and as once it ends, that we will really step into a space where we can start looking into fixing the SABC, not in an interim way, but in a more meaningful and sustained way, because I think that's what's expected of us by the citizens of this country. Thank you.
Ha ke kaleka ho dimedisa mdulatsulo ya Gabane mmoho le lona baemedi ba rona ba Gabane ka hore mema monane re tlo buisana ka lentswe le seipone sa setšhaba se re se hlokang. I will really only touch on three major issues in my presentation, and I will ask that the Honourable Committee forgive me as I've added additional information within my presentation, which we will make available to you. I'll maybe start with unlawful conduct by and or without the intervention of the SABC Board, given the fact that the terms of reference of this committee's work is to assess and establish the capacity of the Board to function, whether or not it only has one sole member standing. The first my colleague has already outlined is about the SABC's editorial policies and the manner in which they were revised, which in our view is unlawful and for which we have laid a complaint with the ICASA's CCC. Section 6.6 of the Broadcasting Act explicitly requires the SABC Board to ensure that there is a public participation in the development of the editorial policies by inviting and considering public comment on such policies and by other means. This language is peremptory and it's quite specific. It does not say that these the public must be engaged and or by other means, engaged through public comment in a draft or through other means, but rather that it must happen through public comment on a draft set of policies as well as by other means. In our papers, which we have made available to this Honourable Committee, we outline the sequence of events around how the SABC ended up revising its policies in an unlawful manner. The key issue here is that in collusion with the Minister of Communications, and we must be frank here, the SABC's board failed to undertake a draft comment process prior to adopting and revising these policies as is required in law, but further went the step of misrepresenting the fact that it had complied with the Broadcasting Act. And indeed, this is stated in a letter by the Minister of Communications, Paul Faith Mutambi, in a letter to the Honourable Van Damme on the basis of a written question to her, that the SABC complied with all requirements set out in the Broadcasting Act in respect of the revision of the editorial policies. Following from here, I'd like to also discuss the issue of the purging of staff. Our colleague and comrade from RTK earlier appraised this Honourable Committee of the issue of the purging of staff. And indeed, we've also seen extensive findings from the Public Protector's Office in her report, When Governance and Ethics Fail. This purging continues to happen in key strategic areas of the SABC. And indeed, we've heard this already from workers of the SABC who were before you yesterday and in other sessions before that. This purging also includes the purging of the SABC's machinery, including finance, procurement, commissioning, as well as the outgoing CEO of the SABC, Ntate Frans Matlala. We are yet to hear of any good reason as to why Mr. Matlala was removed from his position nearly 4 months into his term of office, as well as the quantum of the golden handshake that he was paid out for the SABC's failure to allow him to see through his process, his service to the SABC. This is a critical issue that relates directly to the board as the body that Mr. Matlala, as the CEO of the corporation, accounts to. Linked to the purging of skilled staff at the SABC, we are also reliably informed by members of its staff about the extent to which there has been a breakdown of proper HR policies. Just yesterday, I received yet another call of an unhappy SABC worker pleading for us to represent this issue before this honourable committee. In addition to the brain drain that has been happening at the public the public broadcaster, there have also been irregular appointments and rapid promotions of unsuitably qualified staff who have aligned themselves to Mr. Matswini. While I cannot submit this information as evidence that is in my direct knowledge, it is important that it is heard and further investigated by this honourable committee. It behoves us to draw to the committee's attention to the findings of the public protector in this regard, pointing to the abuse and utter disregard of proper HR processes and policies in the appointment of and promotion of staff, most notably concerning the circumstances under which not only Mr. Motswening, but Ms. Sally Motswening, who was an appointment made directly by Mr. Motswening, were appointed. There's also the issue of undue ministerial interference that precedes the current minister and goes as far back as the former minister, Ms. Dina Bulin. The former minister's role in the irregular appointment of one Ms. Gugududa, the CFO of the SABC at that stage, who was subsequently removed from his position as not only a result of this irregularity, but also because of improper conduct around ensuring good financial controls within the SABC. Ms. Bule directly instructed the board Ms. Bule rejected the board's recommendations, as is stated in the then Articles of Association of the SABC, where they run the recruitment process, undertake interviews, and present the minister with a list of candidates from which she may make her selection, her preferred selection. She returned the list that was presented by the then Ngubane board, demanding that Ms. Gugududa be appointed in this regard. Similarly so, we have also heard extensively of the current Minister of Communications' role in the irregular, irrational, and patently unlawful appointment of Mr. Motswening. It is important that the Minister of Communications is held to account for these irregularities. Further to this, we have also heard of the irregular development of the current MOI, which I must point out was in direct response to our court action, which is pending to be heard next year, around the lacuna in the Broadcasting Act, which was sought to be filled through this MOI around who is the appointing authority of the top three senior executives or the executive directors of the SABC. Again, we see a minister directly interfering and causing all sorts of machinations that are destructive to the SABC, as we have seen through the collapse of board after board after board as a result of this direct ministerial interference. We have engaged the Portfolio Committee on Communications on this matter repeatedly. We have sought for the Portfolio Committee on Communications, not only in this Parliament, but also in the fourth Parliament, to really attend to these matters because of the great concern that we have around them. And it saddens us to say that they have failed us. We have written repeatedly. We have engaged with various members of the Portfolio Committee on Communications, outlining our concerns. We have petitioned repeatedly, and there has been no adequate response in this regard. God. And it's important for this committee to engage with members of the Portfolio Committee on Communications as to why it was that they failed to arrest this problem when it was only just emerging as far back as 2013.
But at this stage, You've got five minutes.
Thank you, Chair. It also has been raised the issue of the introduction of this new Broadcasting Amendment Act has also been raised. Bill has been raised. This bill seeks to exclude Parliament's role as our representatives in the legislature and in government. To make the recommendation to the appointing authority, which is the President, around the appointment of board members. It is well known that the politicisation of the board appointment process has been central to the instability that we have seen in the SABC's successive boards over at least the last 10 years. Unfortunately, now we see a minister who is seeking to seize power over the full management and governance of the SABC by seeking to vest herself as the appointing authority of the SABC's board, and then further to that, setting up her own committee to run what is, to be frank, a bogus public participation process that is apparently independent around the appointment process. This is damaging, potentially damaging to the vitality of our constitutional democracy. As our colleagues from MMA have already stated, the SABC is a critical institution for the dissemination of information to the people of this country. As has been stated previously, over 24 million people rely on the SABC almost exclusively for their information needs. Unless we resolve the crisis that has been continuing for over a decade now inside of the SABC, and we ensure that we secure its independence, not for now, but over a sustained period, we will find ourselves in a situation where our broadcaster, our national public and not state broadcaster, is comparable to state broadcasters in our neighboring countries and other countries in the rest of the continent. It is important that we ensure the independence of our national public broadcaster, that we ensure that this crisis is arrested at this point, that there is a thorough overhaul of all governing legislation in order to ensure that we have an SABC that works and an SABC that works for the people of this country. I thank you.
No questions from me, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mokwena. You've got 3 minutes, sir? 3 minutes?
No. I will use my time. No, thanks. I'm glad you guys have raised this issue and it's come from you, because the issue of local content is something that we need to discuss. One, I'm glad that you've raised the issue that in the Broadcast Act, it is incumbent upon whoever develops the policy around local content, religious issues, and so on and so forth, needs to have public participation in order for them to amend such a thing. And that there was no such a process here in this particular case. Two, the issue of local content is an old issue. I was in the media business in 1996. I think I started in 1993. And even then, we were discussing local content. And there was a reason why we said 70-30 ratio, because you don't want to lock a nation out of an international experience. And what 90-10 does is that it does that. And also what it does, it locks out certain radio stations. But, you know, the ratios, whether it's 90-10 or 70-30, these are issues that the industries should have engaged on. And I think Mr. Motsoeneng and his policymakers would have come to a better conclusion had they allowed for public participation. It's not a question, but I will take your comment on it.
Let me suggest, because it's a comment and you're not going to have enough time to finish it in 5 minutes, just note that comment as the time arises. I'm hoping members will ask questions so that they have time to answer. Otherwise, we can just take your comments. But you'll have to factor it in. Unfortunately, I'm not going to compromise on time. Mr. Mathamu.
Important things have been raised, and I think we're noting them. Now, the gentleman was actually also going to talk about the multi-choice. And I would want him to actually speak on the multi-choice because I think it's a crucial matter. So I give you my 3 minutes for the multi-choice, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mathamu, for the opportunity. The multi-choice deal, we need to look at the chronology. In 2008, we have the Broadcasting Digital Migration Policy, which was developed and gazetted by the late Minister Ivy Matsibakasaburi. Within it, it provides for a robust set-top box control system within government-manufactured and provided set-top boxes in order to, one, stimulate the electronic manufacturing sector in this country in order to become a supplier to the rest of the continent, because the migration process was not only unique to ourselves, but to the rest of the continent and indeed the world. In 2013, along the way, in 2012, we have an amendment that is made by former Minister Dina Bule, which is really the most notable one, where it goes further to clarify these issues around encryption policy and encryption and why we need it in this country, amongst others. In 2013, MultiChoice begins to engage with the SABC through one Mr. Claudio Motsoeneng around this issue. Presumably the board had knowledge of this, and I do implore this committee to engage and with Dr. Ben Gubani on this matter so that he too may really give a full picture of how this deal was negotiated. The essence of the deal was really to secure MultiChoice's dominance as the monopoly player effectively within the subscription broadcasting sector, because one needs an encrypted signal which is scrambled and fuzzed up in order to be able to access international premium content, including football, as well as the big dramas and documentaries and series that are watched internationally and loved by people, both abroad as well as here at home. And then it would go into a set-top box. In this case, it would be the DSTV set-top box or the MNET decoder, at which point then it would be unscrambled and available to be watched by the paying viewer. Similarly, for the SABC, the deal, or rather not similarly, but on the other side for the SABC, the deal would ensure that the SABC remains the dominant free-to-air broadcaster within the free-to-air market. Now, we do need to...
Mr. Makusa, you're going to have to put it on pause. Unfortunately, you'll have to put it on pause. I'm sure somebody, I certainly will give you my time to complete it. But I don't know, I don't want to, unless members say that we must allow him, I don't know how you want to handle this one, because we are not allowing them to answer. We're just asking and making comments. Can we ask either pointed questions or we allow them to respond?
Thank you, and thank you. Maybe you can submit written additional documentation, I think, to set out some of the issues that there isn't obviously time, because I'm very interested on the fiscal position of the SABC. If you can give us a written a document on that, in particular the proposal you say on the very recent move where Mr. Motsoeneng has proposed all contract staff to be given new five-year contracts. That information, what is the fiscal implications of that? Secondly, the issue of National Treasury when they had the investigation on the guarantee, and it seems that nothing further came of that after Mr. Matlara left with what appears to be a golden handshake. If you could give us a written submission on that. And then lastly, maybe you can just respond in 1 minute the current case that you're involved in, you're involved in the Competition Commission. We've had a brief on that already, on the multi-choice deal, but the lacuna in the Broadcasting Act, that aspect, when is that being heard, and does it appear to you that there is a lacuna? Under our impression, we thought it was very clear that Parliament is the appointing authority, and the authority, the President fires members of the board. Thank you.
You have 2 minutes, sir.
If I may have clarity, Chair, what are the specific questions that the Honourable Swart would like answers to right now?
On the court case, I think, on the Broadcasting Act in particular. Thank you.
So the lacuna in the Broadcasting Act is about who is the... I really just need to phrase this in my mind. My apologies, just that it's clear and crisp. It is about who is the appointing authority as regards the executive directors of the SABC. The issue here is that in order to have an independent broadcaster, public broadcaster that is accountable to the people of this country and not beholden to a political authority such as a minister, even though they are in service of this nation, was to ensure that there is a Chinese wall between the executive of government and what is coming out of the national public broadcaster. Now, the Articles of Association were initially amended to incorporate a clause wherein the minister would be designated that appointing authority, which was a fundamental problem for us, which we sought to engage through Parliament and through direct engagement with successive ministers of communication. Unfortunately, that did not result in a positive outcome, which is why we have taken the matter to the High Court. We expect the matter to be heard in the early part of the second quarter of next year, as we have just requested a date from the Deputy Judge President, at which point then we will make that information available to you so that you too may be able to witness what is going on, participate and draw further information. But if you would like further information on this, our papers are published online on our website, soscoalition.org.za, where you may be able to find every single court action that we have litigated on in the service of the people of this country to protect the independence of our public broadcaster.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Koza.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, thank you very much for a well-structured submission. I like the way you've kind of arranged your point. Man, I just need to find out something. The recommendations that you have, one of them is that we need to institute forensic audits on Motsoneng, on all the contracts that Motsoneng did. Is it limited only to Motsoneng, or would you rather we also look at the other aspects that may involve other parties at SABC beyond just Motsoneng? Is it beyond Motsoneng, or you are restricting it to Motsoneng?
Thank you for this most important question, Honourable Khosa. A new part, in addition to my presentation, is that there has been a patent failure of the board to ensure that there are correct supply chain management policies in place and that they are complied with. And the Auditor General's Office did point to this fact and that they were seeking to work with the SABC to address this matter, but the board and management have been dragging their feet.
Okay. No, I think that is fine. I just wanted to say, Chair, it's important because that's another aspect that I don't want people to lose sight of. The fact that the company secretary is very important in ensuring that SABC corporate governance is adhered to, you know. And again, I would request, Chair, that maybe they consider submitting another report to us on how best we can go about restoring governance at SABC and also maybe highlight some of the points that we've made here is that there have been successive board failure and sometimes outright refusal to implement the recommendations of the Special Investigations Unit. I, for one, I didn't know about that aspect, and it would be good if we can get the details of what were contained in that report, because going forward they are going to be absolutely critical in redetermining the fiscal position of the SABC. Thank you.
Honourable Oliver.
Thanks, Chair. I welcome this report. I want to refer you to page 2, where you are reflecting on revision of policies. You are indicating the steps you have taken to an extent that you say you have submitted petitions to Parliament. When was this submission made so that you can check?
Thank you, Honourable Aliyu. I have been with the SOS Coalition since 2012, at which point I initiated the Parliamentary Engagement Programme, which is a key programme because this is where accountability ought to happen. We have made submission after submission after submission through the chair to members, pointing out issues that members in the Portfolio Committee and Communications ought to attend to. We have also done this in this current parliament through the various chairs that have chaired that committee, and we had hoped that we would have had an inquiry as far back as 2014 with the dissolution of the Ngubane board, which did not happen, and we petitioned the honourable committee to consider and engage the matter of undertaking an inquiry such as this one in order to be able to arrest the problems. Unfortunately, this didn't happen until at this point, and we are most grateful for that.
Considering that you are saying the lifespan of a policy is 7 years, and the last revision or revision in GOES was in 2009, it means we are back to that cycle now. I want to take you to bullet number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of your recommendations, where you are citing handshakes and also the revision of policies. Can you cite a few of the handshakes that were recently granted and who then led to those, if you are aware?
I'll start with the most recent, which was the most recent that is in our attention, which was Mr. Frank Madlala's handshake, whose quantum is still undetermined at this stage. Prior to that, there was Ms. Lama Mokhobo's handshake. Prior to that, there was a handshake to Mr. Formule. So the list goes on. And I can provide this Honourable Committee with an infographic which we have developed, which outlines all of the CEOs and senior executives inside of the SABC who have received golden handshakes and when that was.
I'd just like to extend my gratitude to yourselves and MMA and RTK for the great work you've done in ensuring accountability in this sector. I think the work of NGOs is often overlooked, so we're really grateful for your presentations. Two quick questions. For the benefit of the people at home, you mentioned undue influence by the Minister of Communications. What is the Minister's powers in terms of the SABC? Where does she derive her powers? And then your recommendations, you recommend the suspension of James Aguma, the acting CEO and the CFO. Can you just elaborate why you think Mr. Aguma must also be suspended? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Van Damme. Firstly, the Minister of Communications derives her power from a combination of legislation. In the case of the public broadcaster, it would be the Electronic Communications Act, read together with the Broadcasting Act, which is the primary legislation governing the National Public Broadcaster, which supersedes the Companies Act in this case, as was rightly pointed out by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor sitting across from me over there, pointed out to the Portfolio Committee on Communications. The powers of the minister in this regard are to ensure that there is full compliance with all legislation and policy and regulation governing this institution, as well as shaping and determining policy that may relate directly to the institution of public broadcasting in our country. It does not allow her to play a direct role in the management and operational affairs of the SABC. Unfortunately, her conduct has exceeded her powers, particularly around the forcing of appointments to the Ngubane board and then to the Chabalala board and then to the its continuation, which is the Magube board in this case, around particularly Mr. Motswene. So yes, in respect of Mr. Aguma, it is important to note that when Mr. Aguma joined the SABC as the CFO, he had been in another position prior to that, he too played a role as a director of the institution in allowing the corrosion of our national public broadcaster in this regard. In particular here, and this is not only related to Mr. Aguma, but to the whole that the board collectively viewed as an issue as is outlined in the Broadcasting Act, there has been a total bypassing of the SABC's commissioning protocol, which must be compatible with the Public Finance Management Act, around the issue of awarding commissions. This is a supply chain issue. Commissions for programs. Uzalo is one example of an irregularly recommissioned program, and there are a number of others which have not yet been broadcast on the SABC. It is now only happening through unsolicited proposals that go directly to the 27th floor in Mr. Motswene's office, where he still serves right now, even though he's been moved to corporate group executive of corporate affairs. It's now called special projects, which raises further questions.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Chauke.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me appreciate again the presentation. Very much encourage young, energetic presenters. I really want to applaud you. What is your understanding of the parliamentary process when it comes to a bill that is before Parliament? And therefore, in that, what is your participation in that process? And I just want to understand this court case vis-a-vis, if it's with regards to the bill in Parliament, it means that there will be an open process. Maybe just share that.
We have engaged extensively through a number of legislative processes that have been run by Parliament. Currently, in respect of the SABC and the Broadcasting Amendment Bill that has been tabled by the Minister of Communications and is now in the committee's hands, has been that the committee has opened the process up for public comment, and yet we don't yet have a date at which comments must be handed in by. We are engaging with our constituencies and the broad public around what it is that they see and feel about these amendments and what it is that they want to be the outcome of this process, which views we then collate, put together in a submission insofar as they align with our values and principles entailed in our vision document, which you can also find on our website, which contains a series of specific recommendations for the SABC, which you can engage with, after which then it goes back to Parliament for discussion, debate, after which then there will be an adoption of the bill or its outright rejection. So we are fairly well versed in the process.
I thank you very much, Honourable Kelly.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for your presentation. Unfortunately, I only saw it now because there was not a copy on my desk, but it's fine, I've scanned through it. All I wanted to ask you about, you're speaking of a lacuna in the Broadcasting Act. Now, I am a little concerned because if we look at the Act, it's actually a very well-balanced Act. And it was drafted during a period of people who were very clued up with constitutional values, Bill of Rights issues, the nature of the organ, you know, as you indicated, the public broadcaster versus a state broadcaster, because it must comply with the Constitution. Now, my concern is just, if you say we are not sure who is to appoint,
the executive directors. I thought there was absolutely no doubt, because for about 15 years there were no doubts. It was only changed when the memorandum of incorporation was changed. Now, the issue here is, and that went along with the period of the removal of the board members. What is your take on the removal of the board members? Because if I read Section 8A, conversion, sub 5, it's very clear about the position of the Companies Act versus the Broadcasting Act. So what is your view on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Killian. Speaking to the first question around the lacuna, our interpretation of the Act is the same as yours. It is patently clear that the board should be the appointing authority with no involvement of the minister. Unfortunately, because there is no explicit statement in the Act outlining that the board is the appointing authority, we find ourselves in this situation where there are contending interpretations for whatever reason. So, which is why we have taken this matter to court. On the matter of the board removals, particularly those relating to Messrs. Mavuso and Lubisi, as well as Madams Kalidas and the late Hope Zinde, these removals or these board purgings by the Minister of Communications in collusion with the board are patently unlawful. It is irregular that the board may be able to fire its own members when the Act is explicitly clear about the process of the removal of any board members, and to be specific, this ought to be done by the President and the President alone, which is why we have also taken this matter to court, and it will be heard together with the issue of the MOI, because the issues are intimately related in terms of the governing...
Thank you, sir. But do not despair. I'll give you my 3 minutes so you can continue. Hope I never intimidated you guys. Oh, thanks. No. I'm hoping you've taken some notes. People spoke about, I'm talking about additional documentation, National Treasury, how far you are with that, the multi-choice if you want to add to that, forensic audits, is there limits, restoring good governance, what needs to be done, golden handshake, if you could give us a comprehensive list to, as far as you know. And then, of course, public participation, local content, those type of stories. If you could make that available to members of the committee, not to members of the committee, if you can make it available to the boss, not to members of the committee, we will incorporate that in our own deliberations. Thank you very much to both of you. As indicated, or as we always indicate, is there anybody from the SABC that would want to challenge these things? No? As we've said to everybody else that appeared before us, thank you for coming. Our process doesn't end here. It will continue at least until the 28th of February, so feel free to share with us whatever it is that you want to share if you haven't shared it all with us now. And hopefully you're going to have a Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. And we will adjourn and we will all be back here at 5 to 2.